boy.
Oh, boy.
Where's Yolwa?
I don't know. He wasn't in the cave.
I talked to him. He said he has a meeting.
Oh.
He didn't do any research.
I didn't.
Well, neither did I, but I'm here.
There's no shame. There's no shame here.
Well, so I considered not coming, but then Mosen knocked me out of it, sort of. I think actually Mosen said something, and then I changed my mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, no shame.
Yeah, I should have said you don't need to feel like you actually have to do anything.
The motto of the group is not gotta do it.
Yeah, it's you don't have to do it.
Don't gotta.
Just sit around. Just shit talk about shit talk.
Oh, I'm gonna
shit. That's what
I'm
gonna
shit. There were a lot of us last time.
Yeah, John is missing, and so is Adam. Oh, and there's Euro.
I think John was scared. He was like, man, Trevor, you're scary. Top five things about Trevor that I find scary.
I haven't heard a lot of John's top five lists recently.
Yeah, he's kind of petered off on that.
John's gotten jaded.
Yeah.
Oh, has he?
Oh, yeah, he's definitely gotten jaded. I can tell.
Nice.
But,
jaded. Happens to all of us.
If you,
All right.
Like, imagine the situation where you come into grad school and you're like, everything's so cool, and then over time you're like, eh.
Yes.
Every day is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like the song.
Like the song.
Just like the song.
The song?
The song.
Not the one is. Hello, Rachel, bro.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Is this a thing?
We're about to start our Indo-European reading group.
Yep.
You're free to sit in if you want.
Thanks. I'm waiting for Tom.
Oh, boy.
I'm kind of whining to him.
Tired, bored, lacking enthusiasm after having
so
too much of something.
In my experiment,
there's
a sentence.
No, the regular
dictionary.
Real dictionary. Yes.
And before the sentence starts, and it's like, you press
Hello.
The sentence, multiple words show up.
I was, I apologize.
There
because
is like a line of
hashes.
Oh, okay.
It's like a fixation.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
let
yeah.
you know the sentence
gotcha.
Is when it starts.
Okay. Sorry.
So I currently have it that it. The hashes show up and then you press enter, and then the
my office. I've got another sticker.
So if they are
it.
Really
okay. yeah,
like
be
impatient
really
like, and like press enter before it shows up,
yeah.
Then it will skip.
Stickers
okay.
for computers are good.
What are you writing it in?
No.
Psychopath.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, I can change it so it's like it displays for like a minute. Not a minute, but like a
yeah.
second, or like 500
milliseconds.
Hours.
Yeah.
Hours of fighting with it, and I'm like, is it worth it?
Oh, well, hopefully something will come up.
Because I'm like, how important is this? I think I'd rather stand behind the person and be like, slow down.
yeah.
Don't click enter, so.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that.
Planning to do psychological stuff since the beginning, or did it turn out this way somewhere along the line?
Since the beginning. I've been planning this experiment since day one.
Ooh.
Oh. Wow.
That's why this needs to happen. And I don't want another couple of days of delay as I fight with this computer program.
Yeah, but it's good that you knew since the first day what you're going to do. I'm jealous.
I'm procrastinating now, I admit. I was like, I don't want to think about it. Hmm. But anyway, okay. I'll let you get back to your thing. Thanks for listening to me once.
Oh, no, that's my job, or someone's
that's
job.
Your role, yeah.
Yep. Good luck.
That's your job, but
yeah.
Someone's job.
All right, here we are.
Yolla. Yolla. Yolla.
Yolla. Maybe he missed the notice that it's in a different room.
Who?
He. John.
No, he's just in his cubicle.
Nah.
I saw
he's
him.
He's in his cubicle.
John Nimya.
All right. So, anyway, we should organize this.
Okay, I'm going to present in Persian.
Okay.
Please do.
In old
yeah.
Persian.
In old
Persian.
In old Persian.
Really went all
well, you should...
Yeah,
like that
cool.
like that time when you talked about like old Persian history with me in
I don't remember.
Well, no, it was not. It wasn't old Persian history.
It was
revolution? Yeah, it was all about tablas en globis.
Tablas en globis, lo mi.
Yeah.
And you confused that with, like, ancient Persian
history?
No,
I didn't. I was just trying to remember when, like, because he was talking about Persian history. I was just trying to remember where, or Iranian history, and just where. And I was like, oh, wait, no, yeah, it was the revolution. Cool.
Okay, who's going to start?
You.
No.
You look most ready right now.
What?
You look most ready.
Yeah, so the point, I look ready. The point is, I would really appreciate it if we had
the map of Iran?
No. Indo-European sound.
The sound?
So
you,
that
you want to draw them?
I can talk about the...
Do you want me to draw?
You go on first. I'll think about what I'm going
okay.
to do, and then.
Well, I will draw the sound
them.
System up. Should I not erase that? Are you going to use
no,
that?
No, we like it.
Yes,
it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it will be hopefully useful for illustrative purposes.
Well, you can just like sort of draw it generally. All right, I'll try not to erase it. So I guess what I'll do is I'll draw the Indo-European. So I did three for anyone.
Draw the Indo-European.
Draw the Indo-European sound system. I'm just going to finish. I was going
to
start drawing the IPA, but I was like, okay, dude, place of articulation go on the vertical or the horizontal? Like, that's what I forgot over break. Like,
don't do that if you're going to do it for my thing.
I was going to do it for
mine. Okay, then go on.
Okay, so... robust
hey,
red.
That's a robust
yeah.
red, yeah.
So,
sweet.
This is, yeah, you go
that way. Correct.
Sorry.
No. Okay. We're here making Adam King with his
can't do this reflexively? Oh my god, what a fraud of an academic.
On the fires.
Yeah. all right, let me get my. All right, so this is the Indo-European sound system. Released the. You guys know this.
Yeah.
And I guess I should also draw.
Yeah, those are all in there too. Especially the bilabial trill.
Yep.
What's the one in Piraha that's like alveolar? It's like an affricate that's like alveolar stop and an alveolar stop and a bilabial triple at the same time.
Oh yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's like a truck in there.
Yeah. That's why people think Dan Everett's a fraud. That sound doesn't exist. So Greek is actually pretty straightforward. Sort of, depending on who you ask. If you ask me, I'd say it's straightforward. It's not like Germanic where everything changes.
Yeah, I could talk about it.
Yeah,
I can do Grimm's Law.
Yeah,
it's easy.
Can you do Werner's too?
Oh, Werner's Law, I might have to remember. I might need some prodding, but.
Alright, well, so the first.
Grimm's of Disappointment, go ahead.
No, that wasn't at point anyway. Most obvious thing that happens first is you have the merger of Ka and Ka.
Oh, my favorite.
So this is the Kintum merger, as we all know. So Greek is a Kintum language. So after you have that, Greek synchronically doesn't have any kind of labiovelars, so different things happen to all the labiovelar series. If you have, like, before you, they actually just lose the labial quality, so the labial feature, there's some word for this, where like the labial U sort of eats up this W, and so you get coup. So like, in front of, I did print this out, so.
Good to.
Oh, hey.
All right.
Only one page.
A little
So yeah, in front of you, labial velars just lose their labial quality and they merge with velars. When they're in front of E or I, or boy or A, whatever, they actually become dental, which is really weird. So this is why. So like in Latin you say quid, and that's the word for what. In Greek you say tis, that's boo or whatever, or t for what.
Sorry, you said in front of front vowels they become.
Yeah, in front of front vowels they become dental. So some of them are going here. Some of the as for labiovelar, some of them are merging with these. Some of them are merging with these. All the other ones in all other positions, they actually become labials. So basically all these sounds, depending on the position, are like scattered between the others. So functionally these become, I guess I'll get rid of these as well. So that's what we have left. After that, you have devoicing of the labial, or what's it called, the aspirates. So you have devoicing of all these, and this is where you get, you know, the Greek. Yeah, you have of these. So pa becomes pa, you know, ta becomes ta. You
know. Okay,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So these are just like phi, theta, and chi in the Greek alphabet. After that, so you have S. S is really interesting. I think I might have mentioned, S is lost whenever it's before a vowel. That's the way I specified it. It was specified differently in where I read it from, but I think that's what they were trying to say. Basically, you lose S if it's not in a consonant cluster, and you lose S if it's at the end of a word. So basically, it's S before a vowel is lost. there's some interesting, I might have mentioned this to Ryan and Mosin.
Mm-hmm.
So Greek has reduplication.
Yeah.
Basically all Indo-European languages at some level. So, you know, this is the root for stand. And you have a reduplicant that can be reconstructed to this, so you reduplicate the first sound. But because Greek has this law where you lose S's, this actually becomes H. So if you want to say I stand, you have to say histami, and he is a Y, this is a weird one.
This is related to English stand.
So that's nearly in every language, I think.
Static.
Yeah, that would be through Latin. It'd be through Greek, I guess, because stasis. Yeah, that's a Greek word.
Status.
Status, okay. Yeah, stasis is Greek, status is Latin, I think. But it's all the same language.
Okay.
Different dialects.
Yeah, exactly. It's all underlined with English. As we all know, as Chomsky teaches us. Okay, so next you have Y, or Ya. Greek is actually a weird language because synchronically it doesn't have any glides whatsoever. And it loses Y in between vowels, it just disappears.
Sorry, so when you're talking about Greek now, you're talking about classical Greek, right?
Yeah, like the earliest forms of attested Greek.
And can you elaborate a little bit about when those texts were written and how we have them?
What
alphabet they were using?
Okay, they're using the Greek alphabet. There are...
If it was similar to the current Greek alphabet, you don't.
Oh, okay. It's basically similar. You don't have minuscule letters, so everything's uppercase or whatever. Some Greek dialect, I'll talk about. Some Greek dialects lose W and some don't. And in the dialects where you still have W, you write it as digamma, which is another Greek letter that looks something like this. Looks like an F. But this isn't in modern Greek. It's not in your normal Greek.
Aren't some of the earliest records in Munir B?
And most of the earliest languages. So most of the earliest dialects of
Greek have digamma or whatever. And yeah, Linear B is some of the earliest stuff we have. Mycenaean is early, and even so stuff like the Iliad and the Odyssey, which is, you know, obviously like the biggest corpus-like text, the earliest corpus-like text we have in Greek. It actually clearly retained, even though they don't write the glide, it's actually obviously still in there because of meter. So like, you know, you read things as if there's a W there. Otherwise, you wouldn't do the right word. So Greek at the period, at sort of the classic period, you know, 300, 400 BC, maybe a little before that, Greek is divided into a couple different dialects. So there's usually Eastern Greek is like what we, when you take a Greek class, that's what you learn. Attic Greek, that's what they wrote in Athens. So I'm going to draw a little on this. So there's, so this red is like Eastern Greek. So the people of Athens and the people of Ionia would speak in this dialect, and this is closest. When you learn classic Greek, that's what you learn. There's also Doric, well, Western.
And how many years ago is this language, was this language spoken?
It depends on what you mean by language. I mean, these dialects are spoken over a couple hundred years up until, okay, well, let's put it this way. When Alexander conquered everything, that's sort of the beginning of what's called Koine Greek. Are you familiar with that term?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Koine Greek is, you know, a dialect of Greek, which is somewhat simplified. It sort of took over everything, including parts of Greece.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, you had a lot more diversity, and really, up until that period, really from the beginning of Greek writing in the area, you know, from, you know, 600, 700 BC, whatever it is, you have these distinct, you know, dialects that they're going through changes during this period, but they're pretty static.
And Homer's poems, are they using the same language that Homer was using?
No. Well, I mean, it's mutually intelligible, but it's, you know, sort of like Shakespearean English, kind of. As I said, like, there are some differences, so Homer still, you know, has W, he has a couple of their archaisms, it's a different dialect, and I think people will use, I'm not 100% sure, I don't know if either of you guys know, but I think people usually say Homer was speaking some kind of Ionian dialect.
And Homer wrote in his own version of Greek, he wasn't using an archaic version of Greek.
That depends on a lot of things. First off, Homer isn't writing, you know, it's oral tradition. Secondly, it's not clear if Homer is just one person. So there are lots of reasons to think that some portions of the Iliad or the Odyssey were written a lot before others. And you'll actually see a lot of, I'm not super familiar with it, but I do know that there are different, you know, syntactic constructions that are used in different portions. There are some, I think there's something called the Chant of the Sailors or something, I forget what it is, something like that. That's known to be like the oldest portion of the Iliad or something like that. And it has all these archaisms and all these sort of peritactic constructions that are in earlier Indo-European. I actually wanted to talk about this when we talked about syntax. One of the things about Indo-European is it's like Piraha or like a lot of, you know, Indian languages in that you don't really have embedded structures a lot. You don't really have relative clauses. Instead, you have sort of like deictic relatives, so in the place of those, so you'll be like, you know, Trevor is that guy who uses the computer, or something like that, something like that. So like relative pronouns in all Indo-European languages, in the earliest languages, including the earliest Homeric Greek, Sanskrit and stuff like that, they are all sort of deictic. So they sort of mean like that person right there. They're not actually like who the way we use it in English. So they're they refer to a specific entity. And they're grammaticalized as what we now know of as relative clauses.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, a lot of early, you know, Indo-Europeanists who studied Indo-European to talk about how great Indo-Europeans are, that was one of the justifications, you know, you can find a bunch of quotes like this. You know, things like relative clauses were supposed to be one of the reasons that Indo-European languages are just so great, because, you know, they have these highly complex syntactic constructions that all the primitive languages don't have, or whatever.
Of course.
So that, you know, just so you know. So you have for the West, you have dialects like Doric, which I think are pretty archaic. I think you know, they still have W's and stuff like that. Actually, on the sheet, I have like dialectal rules. Nearly all of these are with Attic, because Attic is one of the most, like, these, the Eastern languages are the most innovative of all of these. So, for example, Attic, you lose W, you have palatalization of T. Some dialects, just sort of all over the place, will actually lose initial H's or stuff like that, or H's generally. And that's a change that's going on really during the entire Greek written period. So it can't be pinned down to one specific time. Let's see. So why? Indo-European, yeah. So it's lost intervocalically. It's lost as a glide. Initially, it's sort of weird. It either becomes H or it becomes zeta. So zeta is the Greek letter we get Z from, of course. And its pronunciation in classical Greek is not 100% sure. So it's very clear that in the later, in Koine, in Alexandrian Greek, it was pronounced as Z. Or especially in Byzantine Greek, it was definitely pronounced as like za, as a voice fricative. Students.
Students. That's cute.
Her email says, a rambling apology. I've talked to you once. Like, what?
Okay.
They're cute. what was I saying?
Zeta?
Oh yeah, zeta. So there are two possibilities for the classical period. It's either pronounced zda or does. So something like that.
Okay.
And you can look at, I assume Trevor's like on Wikipedia or something.
No.
Okay.
Or, well, I was until moments ago.
Okay. Well, this is an open question, and I have no opinion on it. Actually, I think the answer is this. This is my opinion. I just made it up right
Stack
now.
Them.
What's clear is there's some kind of variation. Different languages or different dialects seem to prefer one or the other, but it's not totally clear. If there was actually, or evidence in certain languages points to one versus the other, we don't know which one was actually pronounced as. But metrically, it's, you know, two.
Great.
Anyway, that's me rambling. So you actually have some. So like in English, you have yoke. Goes back to Indo-European, yeah. And Greek, you'll have like, you know, what is it? You have a word like zeugma. Ever heard it?
Yeah.
You ever heard of that in English? You know,
I have heard that before. Yeah.
So it's like when you say, it's a linguistic thing when you say something like, I came into the room with Ryan and much happiness. That's a zeugma. It's like putting two prepositions or together. Or putting the same preposition, using it different ways.
John and his license expired last week.
Uh-huh. That's a funny one.
Yeah. That's the one the dictionary gives.
That's good. Okay.
So John expired?
He died.
Oh, I
didn't
know.
Yeah.
He became dead. He entered a state of dead.
Or like with weeping eyes and hearts for something less morose.
So, where was I? Just going down the list.
Going down the rabbit hole.
So, yeah, functionally is lost because it becomes... Greek loses a lot of shit. So, yeah is basically a lost other shit. Syllabics, so basically every Indo-European language works like this. All of the syllabic resonants are totally lost. So, M and N in Greek become A. So, this is why... you have like so the English prefix on just like the Latin prefix in, like in
oh
Google.
Okay
and yeah. In Greek what is it, it's a. So they all are traced back to a syllabic in, and I think the same is true in in Latin you have immortal, in Sanskrit you actually also have it going to a, so you have like amartya is the equivalent of immortal.
What's the Greek for 100?
Hekaton. Yeah,
DN is lost there too.
You
expect it to be Hengatong. Like, because the same thing is happening in Indo-Iranian, this syllabic N. So, Kentum, this N used to be syllabic N in Indo-European.
Oh, well, in Greek, I think that is the Greek word for hunter is a little different because it takes declensional endings or something. So it's,
yeah, but Indo-Iranian made it Satum for exactly the same reason. Got rid of the N because it was syllabic N.
Yeah.
Replaced it with an A.
Oh.
Satum.
And also in Greek. So, like, normally in Indo-European languages, the accusative is M or N or something like that. I didn't even put this in the sheet. So, normally in Greek, like, if you have a vowel stem, it'll be fine. Right? And in Greek, you'll have an ending in on, so like, lukon, or whatever. But in where you don't have a vowel stem, it'll actually just be ah. And I always wondered when I learned Greek, like, why the fuck is it ah? That doesn't make any sense. Well, because
actually, it does make sense.
It's a syllabic m. And in L and R, you just add an epithetic off. So whatever's more phonologically clear, if you put it either on the at the beginning or at the end. And I didn't put it here. That's one of the most important things. So Greek, of course, loses the laryngeals, and Greek is the interesting language because. In most languages, like, the laryngeals will all become something different. They'll all become the same thing. So in Latin, they all become A. I think in Indo-Iranian, they all become E or something like that. But in Greek, they become either, one becomes E, two becomes A, and three becomes O. So you have a triple, what's called a triple reflex. That's what they call it in Indo-European studies. So that's that.
Oh, boy.
And as I said, W is lost in some dialects, or it's lost in Attic, so it's lost everywhere. Fuck all the other dialects. But if the Spartans took over the world instead of, if the Spartan dialect took over the world instead of the Athenian dialect, you wouldn't study economics, you'd study weconomics.
Weconomics.
They have that W. So,
I'm happy it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Weconomics.
I'm trying to think of some other ones. So there are a couple Greek dialects do different things with dentals and the dental clusters. So even in English, you have some reflexes of this. So
we should write a novel where something in the course of history changes, and as a result, people speak differently. Only a little different.
Entire genre.
Yeah, that's
I'm pretty sure that's an entire genre. It's called alternate history.
Yeah, but
I know,
it's
but
just
linguistically.
Yeah, people speak like normal English, except some words sound differently because of some historical incidents in the past.
Like English.
The Romans feel invading, and like it's a novel that takes place in America without that, and everyone speaks like in 100% English words.
Yeah. You know what would be even funnier if the world were exactly the same otherwise? Like, it's just, otherwise, it's an extremely boring novel, but the language is different.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. I want to do that.
Yeah. Everything's the same. Everything's, let's see. I think that's about it. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, so, like, some, we have words like in English, like glossary and polyglot.
Yeah.
The T. So some Greek dialects, that goes back to XX. So there's a Greek word glau, XXA.
Uh-huh.
Some dialects have TT, some dialects have SS. And so we borrow these two words from different dialects. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Well, that's basically it.
In English, did English directly borrow these words from Greek, or is it through Latin?
Really through Latin. There's not that much contact with Greek directly.
I mean, generally, like, the Greek words that we see in English, they're all coming through Latin.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, everything we have from Greek exists in late Latin or something like that, or some words are just conscious. Well, nowadays things will be consciously borrowed from academic Greek, but obviously no word is going to endogenously move from Greece to English through language content. Like all these words are like learned words, basically. So they're sort of consciously borrowed from Latin and Greek, or the division between Latin and Greek during the medieval period is ambiguous anyway.
Right.
Other ones. And about the vowels. Greek has what are called 5-vowel dialects and 7-vowel dialects. 5-vowel dialects, guess how many vowels they have? 10. They actually have 10 vowels, 7-vowel dialects have 12. That's because the 5-vowel dialects are, we're actually talking about the long vowels.
Yeah.
All languages have 5 short vowels, it's just some have 2 extra long vowels. I totally didn't know. When I took Indo-European or comparative Greek and Latin at Georgia, the way I had pronounced Greek in my head was totally different from what I learned it was actually. So, like, this letter, how would you guys pronounce this?
That's that, right?
How would you say it in Greek? How do you think?
I would guess
Yeah, that's what I thought. There's very good reason to think this was actually like in English, like an app.
Oh, my favorite.
So there are a couple things that are sort of weird. Omega has a sort of...
So they call themselves Hellenics?
I guess. Elas.
Elas?
Elas.
Oh, it is sometimes spelled that way. In Roman.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Roman letters.
Let's see.
Latin letters, I guess.
So...
Speak Roman.
Speak Romantic.
So oof runs to in Attic. That's another notable thing. That's sort of weird when you learn classical Greek.
Languages that have are doomed.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. It's doomed. And all terms to a. Yeah.
Dude.
Anyway, I think that's about it as
cool.
far as Greek goes. So
Greek's awesome.
So I'm gonna.
Do you want me to play with my map so that you can have the rest of the board space?
Play with your maps?
My map.
Oh, you drew it? I thought
yes.
Luke drew it.
No, I drew it.
You mean you want to go first? Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Most of them, and probably also Ryan by now, know that my favorite thing about the poetry and
the linguistics is the history, not the linguistics. So that's why I drew the map. Because the way that the language is distributed tell us some cool things about like how people moved and such.
Yeah.
So the original Kentum group was probably somewhere up here. There were 2 major migrations from this group. The first one was down the Black Sea coast, and they became the Greeks, right?
Is with the assumption that the Kentum group were...
Yeah, with the
really
assumption that it was a group. It really wasn't a group. There were plenty of divisions. I mean, this is a huge area. But this is... All these languages have lots of traits in common, right? And it is pretty clear that the Hellenic group moved out first. Then there was a second migration that kind of was coming in this direction, but... If you know anything about...
Sorry, what's this?
Oh, that's the Danube.
Oh, okay. And this is...
That's the Rhine. And they're both eventually going to be important. The Rhine, probably not so much.
Rhine.
Important.
This is more to be as a hint to you, because, see, it turns this funky way for a very particular reason, and that is there's a whole bunch of mountains right here. And that splits this group.
Is that the Urals, or...?
These are the Carpathians, and they do form this kind of, like, wedge shape, and that's important for the rest of history, because later you get the Gauls and the Visigoths go this way, and the Ostrogoths go that way, and then you get the Hungarian peoples come in, and they find this thing, and they're like, ooh, that looks nice, and they nestle into this little corner so none of the Indo-European people can kick them out. these people come become, they move up here, become the Germanics, and these people down here see the Greeks, and they're like, oh shit, walled cities, no. And they run up the Attic coast? Is that the Attic coast? No, it's the Illyrian coast.
Oh, that one right there?
Yeah, whatever.
Illyrian.
They run up that way. And then they hit another obstacle, and that is the Alps. And that splits the group again. Some of them go that way, and some of them go that way. These guys become the Celts, and they fill this whole area, and Britain too. And then these become the Italic peoples, and they apparently have some difficulty because it takes a long time for Italy to be filled with Italic peoples. So you basically got...
Sorry, where are the Germanic
peoples? Yeah, I was about to ask that.
They're up here.
Okay.
They're the first group that split
off. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So the migration route for the Celts is totally different from the Germanic
peoples. The migrational route for the Italo-Celts is different from the Germanic peoples.
Yeah. Later, the Germanic people start to move.
Right. They eventually start moving kind of downwards, and then the Huns come.
Oh.
And then you get the Germanic invasions of the Roman Empire.
Like they were running away from the Huns?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's called the Huns cause all kinds of crazy stuff to happen.
They're killing us. Let's kill them.
Well, they...
Let's get away on the way.
Let's talk about history later, because that's like one of my favorite periods of Roman history is how these migrations happen. it's really cool how it works out. So anyway, we get the Italic languages down here. These are the important ones. They settled in a pretty small area along this coast. These are the Proto-Romance peoples, also known as the Latins or the Romans. Then you've got another group that's like the Umbrians around here, and then there's like a couple more peoples down here, the Samnites. And that's about it. This is mostly Greek. I probably should have made it yellow. And this is mostly Celtic. People come down here and kind of... this is Etruscan. This is one of the native, as far as we know, peoples of Europe.
It's pretty well established that because people have tied Etruscan. I think people have tied Etruscan to a couple other languages around Greece, and I think that they might possibly be related to Caucasian languages or something like that.
I saw one proposal that they're related to Basque.
If anyone ever says anything's related to Basque, just shoot them. Nothing's related to Basque. But I was going to say, in addition to that, there are also some other families. So there's like Venetic that's around Venice, and then there's Illyrian and stuff. So there are a bunch of these other sort of Indo-European languages around here that aren't necessarily tieable to any family we know of. So there's probably even more populations.
They tend to get thrown together into Italic. But
there's not a good
reason to think that they are. Really, they have more similarities to Indo-European as a whole than to Latin or the languages that are clearly closely related.
Well, I think some people will say that Illyrian, at least, is some early form of Albanian or something like that. And possibly Venetic is related to that, but I don't know the specifics of all of it.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So it's totally possible that the Italic, or Proto-Italic, totally didn't exist, because there's multiple Indo-European groups in there, and it's extremely difficult to really, this is kind of a general picture of how things kind of turned out, but it's extremely difficult to identify, like, this is the Italic homeland, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a nice narrative you have of the mountains and migrations. So.
It is, and it works, and I like it, and that's why I shared it.
Yeah, that was nice.
And this is not something that I made up, if you wanted to know.
Oh,
let me try and rebuild this table, because that was a cool table, and I want to do it that way, too.
We don't need it anymore.
So I don't know Proto-Indo-European, so tell me where I go wrong.
Palatals and labiovelars.
So these ones get like the little that guy because they're palatals.
Palatal is the the mark on top. If you're doing italic, you don't really need those anyway.
Because they're going to merge.
Yeah, right. But, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and skip the Kensum thing.
Okay.
And go. Because these guys...
Remember to voice the...
Did survive.
Voice.
Or, oh,
yeah, that needs to be G. Oh, yeah. We need to change all this. And you need B and D for pun to... Because they're voiced...
For B... Wait, what?
No, no, so pun should be bum. Yeah.
So are they voiceless aspirants in Greek, but voiced aspirants in Proto-Indo-European?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in later Greek, of course, they become fricatives, so it's fathacha.
Fathacha. It's like a swear word.
Yeah. Right. So if we're going to go ahead and pretend that Proto-Italic exists, then it has this four-way consonant distinction, at least to begin with. And then the laryngeals all become vowels, like you said.
Yeah, I think they're all ah.
One of them becomes A, and one of them becomes O, and one of them becomes A, according to the thing I read just now.
What's with that? I'm pretty sure that's wrong. I'm going to call that out. Because I think they should all be A.
Let's see. Yes. H1 and E becomes A, H2 and A becomes A, H3 and A becomes O.
Maybe that's true in Proto-Italic, but in Latin itself, it's...
Okay,
it's
in Latin itself, that probably changes.
I'm pretty sure.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back. This is the top, this is the top. Oh, shut up, you.
I'm just
standing here, I'm lurking.
Meeting.
Oh, what can you do?
It has to
rotten. Oh, shit.
It's
the lady?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh,
we can
do
it.
Technically, isn't my meeting.
Oh,
State
you're just
Lady has the meeting, and I just want to sneak in a couple of minutes before
and
ask a quick question.
That makes it less annoying, I think.
I'm going to use this.
Well, you can learn about Indo-European.
Or particularly...
He's going to talk
did
about...
Did you guys do the map of Europe?
Oh.
Yeah, that's Trevor's doing.
Yeah, that's my map.
He's about to run
it's
us through sound
I can
changes.
Recognize
through sound
Europe.
Changes in italic.
Yeah, he's doing
yeah.
italic. We're all assigned different language families. Mm-hmm.
So these guys, they all become fricatives. So we get...
Hold on. I'm going to consult the Christomathy on this because I think it's more complicated than that.
It's probably more complicated than that. But the end result is that they become...
Oh, so you're doing it in italic, though, not
italic.
Latin. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So they become the this is voiced. What's the voiced one? That's the one that's
it's
gamma,
the
right?
gamma looking one. Fucking Wikipedia man.
And these guys, they each during the early Proto Latin period, they have allophones that are unvoiced, right?
Before Latin, right?
Yes. Latin doesn't have all those fancy sounds.
Latin
in fact, it has none
not,
of them.
It does not have these fancy sounds.
If we don't have a letter for it, it's not in Latin. That's
right.
That's why we don't have a letter for it.
So then there's this funky bit that happens where... So the aspirates became fricatives, right? I'm looking at a different section of this page that I looked at before, some of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right, and S also gets the allophony with Z. It's kind of strange how it goes backwards like that.
No.
And then, this is the interesting part of Italian phonology. I'll make sure I get it right. So eventually, so the unvoiced fricatives, I think it was phi and theta first that became their own phonemes, that just totally screwed everything up. That's what happened. It was these guys merged.
Was it three?
The and the?
Okay. The and the.
Completely unconstrained.
Pluh and th merge with th to make this big new phoneme that eventually becomes th, right?
Okay.
And that kind of screws up everything. So you go to you, you go to you, you go to you. These guys are no longer there. But now this allophony thing is broken.
Yeah.
And that throws everything into chaos. Or actually, that one survives a little bit longer.
And italic went into chaos.
Italic went into chaos.
Existential. Yes.
In each of the other languages in the Italic family, unfortunately, I didn't look closely into how this happened, but each of... So this obviously becomes the... Right. And this guy, and this guy, and this guy, they all just totally disappear in their own ways for each family. I don't know how it works for Latin.
Well, I have like the actual Latin answers.
Oh,
if you would like them.
But, I would like them.
I mean, are you done with?
Yeah, the last thing was just that we got standard five vowels with a length distinction, just like in five vowel Greek.
Yeah.
And then they lost the length distinction somewhere along the way, or?
I can tell you that.
In between Latin and Roman.
So basically, let's.
Because Latin still had it.
Romance is where I started doing historical linguistics. So it's interesting. So, this draw a bell chart like this.
A really good orange.
I don't like the feminine picture. E.
Orange.
Oh, ooh. So basically, in terms. Originally in classical Latin, it was only a length distinction. So they had the same vowel quality, and you had them like this. In later Latin, you had a distinction in the short vowels in terms of quality. So all of the short forms actually move interiorly, but
tense.
So in terms of length, they are still these are still long and these are short. But eventually that is lost, and it's exclusively with quality. So ah and ah merge because it's only a length distinction. So you have now nine vowels. Then what happens in most Romance languages is that you have a merger between the long O and the short U and the long E and the short I. So those vowels collapse. And so you have...
So you get O and A. They're kind of natural pairs.
What?
Those are natural pair diphthongs in most languages. Like English speakers, you can't say O without going to... You can't say...
Yeah, so the short forms become so short that they become the other, these. So that's why in, Latin beetle for pear becomes beta in Spanish, or wow. So this wa goes back to a
yeah.
In
yeah.
French. So, that's
sorry, it says, how did the air go to wa?
French is just fucked up.
Okay.
I mean, like they're like basically every 50 years in French, they add something or they subtract something to every single vowel. So like you just have to know that it goes to wa eventually. I mean,
why is it spelled like oi?
It used to be oi. It used to be pronounced like
that.
So
what's the order? Oi, e, wa, and some things
in
between.
Okay, yeah, lots of things in between. I'll say that.
But it's first it was oi, somewhere in between it was e, and then it finally became wa.
Or at the beginning, it originally was I, then e, then oi, then wa. So, and lots of steps in between. Yeah.
It's like just random.
French is a fucked up language. Just
don't bother.
Everything else merges. Actually, pretty much all the sounds become wa. But, but I was going to, do you want me to
put
the...
That's all that I know.
4:30 today.
Je pense que c'est ça.
Yes,
we have only 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
We should run.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
We are...
Persian for you.
Oh, shit.
Well,
it's okay.
Much Persian for us, no Persian for him.
Oh, yeah, damn it.
So but for next
no
week,
history.
Then we can have
no history Persian, yeah.
His stuff and
that's
then my stuff. And then
yeah.
Yola.
Yola.
I will probably talk more history than phonology.
Yeah.
Good.
Anything's good. Anything but linguistics.
In spite of being a phonologist.
Fuck linguistics.
You know what?
Well,
when I was reading a phonology paper, I'm like,